Stop, man. Let's stop this shit. I'm already recording.
One, two, three. Mr. Matt Serra, how's it going, my man?
How are you, Hafa? What's new, man?
Not much. Yeah, well, we've been talking about doing this for a few weeks, and last week was just crazy with all that Weidman stuff.
Yeah, that was crazy, man. We got a mutual friend, Rose Gracie.
Yes.
Who I know a very long time.
And Henzo, too. Wow. I know Henzo very well.
Henzo, shoot, man. Henzo's family to me.
Yeah, he's the
you
best.
You know what I mean, Mr. Henzo? I wouldn't be over here on... How do you pronounce your show? What do you call this?
It's a... Well, it's like MMA Today, but H-O-J-A-E. It's like Oji.
So Oji?
Oji, yeah. It's a MMA Today in Portuguese.
Oh, why wouldn't be on MMA Today if it wasn't for Master Henzo Gracie? So there we go.
So how's let's just get this Weidman stuff out of the way. How you be in touch with him at all? How is it feeling? I love that he's doing a lot of social stuff so people can follow what's going on.
I know about as much as everybody else. You know what I mean? It's very it's very depressing. Yeah. You know, when you see a friend of yours like that having to go through, see anybody have to go through exactly. Something so horrific, you know what I mean? But I just like to, you know, what makes me feel good is that I know like the worst is over, you know, not that it's out of the woods yet with anything, but, you know, the worst, exactly. The absolute worst is over. So yeah. That makes me feel better. So. It was just, you know, horrendous.
Yeah, we were looking so forward to see how was it going to come back, right? Because I remember talking about his upcoming fight. And the big question is like, sometimes, I heard Ray Longo talking about that too. It's more like a mental block that he's been dealing with through the fights and not getting the W's and stuff like that. And I was super excited to see him come back, and then that shit happens. And
I mean, I'll tell you this much, like and especially, you know, quoting Ray, like he hasn't looked like this in years. You know, he looked phenomenal, and yeah. He had a great camp and feeling good, looking good. And you know, this is the game we play. Yeah. You know, it's a rough game. It's an unforgiving sport, but you know, we all know the risks, you know?
Exactly. I just think it's like it was mind-blowing that had to happen to him, of all people, after what happened to Silva, too, right? It's like,
what's the chances of that?
Shittiest coincidence ever, right?
It's like worst coincidence you could think of. Exactly. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's just a brutal thing. You know, I've never seen those kind of breaks in kickboxing before I even did MMA. I'm watching it and like, I'm like, man, I hope that God, you know, it makes you a little hesitant to let loose on those leg kicks. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. So it looks like he's in good spirits. So it's, you know, the worst is over now.
The worst is over. That's how we got to look at it.
He's going to have like a good year recovering from all of that until he bounces back and stuff. So,
yeah, I'm sure. But it's not
still
the last
a young guy. So there's plenty for him out, right?
I believe so. You know, especially with his fighting style, you know, if he doesn't want to throw another kick again, he doesn't have to. That's how, good,
shit, right?
Like, how good of a wrestler and jiu-jitsu man he is. So
he was never that big of a kicker anyway.
Well, you know, I'll tell you right now, that's a little deceiving because his leg kicks. I will tell you this a little bit behind the scenes is that Ray Longo was telling me he had a hard time holding those pads backstage. That's how hard he was kicking. So he really let into that kick. No, I've seen him kick guys' legs out. Like, you know, he can kick. Yeah, Weidman's a stud. You know, he's a well-rounded, fighter. And it's just an unfortunate thing. You know, it really is.
I hear you. I still remember Joe Rogan on that face-off with Silva. That Silva was talking some shit to him. And Joe Rogan, he was like right there. And he'd say like kind of like Weidman broke Silva right there on the face-off. Because he had so much confidence. And he just stared down. He looked at Silva and said, dude, what the fuck are you doing? I'm not afraid of you.
He said, yeah, I might work with other people, but I'm not afraid of you. No. Well, Chris, I feel Chris had Anderson's number. He had his number. He was really just... You know, and that's unfortunate about that second fight because he.
The second.
But fight, I feel even if it wasn't for that, Chris was just, you know, on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, hey, man, we're going to see Chris again. You know, I just hope he heals up and, you know, he's a very good man.
It's a funny thing that because you were present. One you're actually fighting on probably like two of the biggest upsets in UFC, right? Your GSP fight. And then Anderson's with Chris fight. I mean, you guys knew him, but so far for the scenario at that time, Anderson was the man. He had like a Nike sponsorship and shit like that. Anderson knows. I never forget that. Yeah. Right. And then Chris gets there and knocks him out when he was dancing and doing all that shit. And you and I had GSP on the show, and I think we talked about you and we talked about bouncing back from that loss.
Oh yeah.
And you just got a thing with him, right? You guys were doing a podcast together or something like that. He was like, oh my God.
Yeah, George is a good man. He was just on UFC. I do UFC Unfiltered.
Yeah.
And that's the UFC's official podcast. I do it with comedian Jim Norton. Jimmy's great. So George came on and we were reminiscing, and then we found out we're both Star Wars fans. So we were like, you know, geeking out about that. So we had a really good time, man. We had a good time. I always got along well with George. George is a very likable guy. He's just a great man. Like George St. Pierre is just an all around great dude. You know,
he's a gentleman, right? How was that at that time? I'm not sure how far back George goes to the Renzo team and when he started coming back. And how does that link to you? Because it was like, how was it at that time? Were you guys like kind of like Renzo Gracie guys? And kind of, right?
Say again, the last part?
He was like kind of part of the same Renzo Gracie team.
Yeah, no, he was. But he came way later than like I was one of like, I was like, you know, Renzo Gracie's first class, you know what I mean? Like the X-Men first class. I was part of these original students when he came over in like 1996. So
you were the first black belt
American black belt. Yeah. So I had seniority. So he wasn't really welcome to train there when I was fighting, getting ready for the fight.
I see.
You know, again, this is all now. Listen.
Well, it's all
of course, this is ages ago, and this is home now. And he's got a very tight bond with John Danaher. But even John Danaher, who's very tight with him, is, you know, super tight with me. And, you know, he even had to step back and didn't teach him for that time. So it was a little weird, but we fought a couple of times and now everything's great. We both kick each other's asses, so we're all welcome. Shit,
exactly, right?
It's all good. Yeah, exactly.
What do you see about this John Danaher squad move to Puerto Rico?
I think it's amazing. I'm just happy for my friend. Listen, when you've seen somebody's whole journey from the second they walked into the Jiu-Jitsu Academy and they're just a bouncer / philosophy teacher, which is an interesting combination. And then to see that guy become like the most genius mind on the planet for Jiu-Jitsu and to really just help the sport evolve to the next level, everything with his take on jiu-jitsu and his, especially the evolution of the leg game, you know what I mean? The ashigaramis. And it's just, I'm so happy to see my good friend living on a beach doing what he loves. Like, you know what I mean? That's how he ended up. That's fucking great. You know, I'm just happy for my friend, and all his students are all great guys. And, you know, like Gordon Ryan is amazing. And I love watching Gary Tonin, especially fight MMA. I like the way he incorporates the new technique.
He's so good at one, right?
He's doing great. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just happy for the whole situation. Happy for all those guys, especially Johnny.
It's impressive how much Gordon absorbed from John, right? He's kind of like mini John kind of thing. Like he kind of teaches like John Danaher. He talks very low and very paused, and he became some sort of a nerd of the sport, right? Like he studies a lot. And I had Sean O'Malley on the podcast.
Okay.
And we were talking about that. He kind of does the same thing. It's like he watches a lot of his own training, and he watches other people's fights and styles. And I was like, you're kind of like a nerd of this part. He's like, yeah, man, I just enjoyed that. And the first reference I had, it was Gordon Ryan, because I had a class with him, and it's amazing how he teaches. He's so like step by step on every level, and he's just great. He absorbed John Danaher's way, right? It's not just the technique, but he absorbs like almost everything that man had to offer. It was just amazing to see.
Hey, listen, man, and then you know he's gonna pass that on to his students. It's the circle of life. Exactly. It's a beautiful thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. So yeah, I'm happy for all those guys. I love it. I love it all. I'm an old school jiu-jitsu guy. I like teaching the fundamentals more than anything, because that's just what I'm an absolute expert at. But don't get me wrong, my student Jason Rao is he spent a lot of time with the Death Squad, so he was helping me with my outside ashi, and I got one off the other day on one of my brown belts, and I was like, oh, nice. So I'm still having fun with it, you know.
That's awesome.
But you know, kind of like Will Smith, I just don't like entanglements. I don't want to get my that's fucking, it's a little they can't all be gems there, Hoppa. Anyway, I just don't want the 50-50 positions, only because my knee's got some arthritis and I don't like the twisting and shit. So I like Henzo shows a beautiful counter to the ashigarami when somebody's coming around for your leg, how you put the foot in front, come through, and you get a foot lock, and you can use that to pass. And I love it all. I love it all. I love jiu-jitsu.
You're more like a Gracie roots guy, right? Like the fundamentals. Well,
100%. Yes. I mean, I teach everything that Master Henzo, you know, taught me, you know? So I know how to bring guys up, especially with the fundamentals. Yeah. Like I'm going to, well, tonight I'm probably going to teach the advanced guys, but I'll tell you, half the time I'll teach the white belt class. I love
That's
it.
That's awesome.
Because I like to get guys hooked also. Because once they get hooked, then they're on their journey.
That's true. Just it's so important to too, right?
Sticking around. But the white belt class, that's when guys are still testing the waters. And
exactly.
So I like to jump in that class, give them a nice good time, and stuff I've been doing for over 20 years. So, exactly. You know, that's awesome. Whatever. That's what I enjoy.
Just kind of what Master Henzo does, right? Like he's been pulling, a 12-1 that becomes like a 12-3 class.
That could happen. We like
it's the best class because he teaches a lot and he talks a lot and tell all the stories. It's almost like a live podcast with jiu-jitsu every day. It's awesome.
Oh yeah, man. And I was fortunate enough to have Henzo, you know, like 5 days a week. You know what I mean? Coming up in the city. So
that's awesome.
You know, I was spoiled.
How did that start? How'd you find him?
I started jiu-jitsu. The first time I ever tried jiu-jitsu was in 1992 when I was 18 years old. I did a road trip to Connecticut, and you had Horion Gracie and Hoyce Gracie.
Wow.
And this was before the first UFC. They were doing a seminar in Waterbury, Connecticut. And this guy, Ron something or rather, some Jiu-Jitsu guy, he had to have some high school or something in a gymnasium. And I went to that seminar and I just fell in love with it. You know what I mean? So I knew I wanted to do it. And wanted to learn it. It was just about, you know, where, because there was no place on the East Coast except for Steve Maxwell in Philly, you know. So besides that, you know, there was the Gracies in Torrance. And then, you know, maybe like a year or so, a couple of years or a year after that, Craig Kukuk was the first American who got a black belt under the Gracies. And he was under like the Torrance crowd, but they had a falling out. And then he ended up hooking up with Henzo. They were like business partners, Craig Kukuk and Henzo Gracie. So I was with Craig. Craig Kukuk started teaching in Manhattan one day a week. He was from Jersey, taught at a judo club in Manhattan one day a week. I found that out, I don't know, maybe in a black belt magazine or some shit. He had no internet back then. So I'd go from Long Island to the city, like an hour train ride, whatever it is, and go there just for that one day a week and learn from Craig Kukuk. And I did that. Eventually he did 3 days a week in the city. And then after that, you know, I got my blue belt from him. And then a couple of years after that, Henzo came over, like 1996. Okay. And that's when they ended up opening up in on 27th Street. What is it? Gracie Kukuk. You know what I mean? So I started there. I mean, I stayed there with them. And next thing you know, Henzel gave me a job there. And I started working for him as a purple belt. You know what I mean? Because I was doing all night security and I was training a little shitty. And he goes, look, man, quit that job at night and stay here. Just train here and teach here. And so then the next day I showed up cleaning the fucking bathrooms and I loved it. I was happy as shit. So from a purple belt on, Henzel took me under his wing. And then, you know, him and Kukuk ended up breaking apart the way businesses do and partnerships do. And, you know, even though I was with Craig first, I was way tighter with Henzo, way tighter. Craig will never let you get too close. He's kind of like a stern German dude and just like, you know. And then he wasn't too personable. He was had good jiu-jitsu. He really did. Had very good basics. Found that he had like that Torrance Gracie jiu-jitsu, like the Gracie brothers. And he had that like self-defense and just a strong foundation. He had a good jiu-jitsu. But then Henzo took it obviously to the next level, you know. And Henzo like cared about my progress. You know, I remember I was going to do the worlds as a purple belt. And I didn't have enough money. And he goes, you have to go. If you can't afford to go, I'll pay for you to go. But you have to, it's good for your experience this. That's so, I mean, he you know, and then he took me to corner him in Japan when he's fighting. You know, I was a purple belt. I was a kid. So for him to give me this much, you know, respect and responsibility and have that much faith in me, I was just like, whoa, man. I can't say enough about Henzo Gracie.
And for you to experience all of that too, right?
So, oh, man, that's priceless, you know?
Yeah, Henzo.
Yeah, yeah.
So tell a little bit about the podcast. I want to put a link on the description here so people can find you guys, because I don't think you have a lot of listeners from Brazil, do you?
You know what? I'm not sure. But anywhere you find the podcast, it is the UFC official podcast. So UFC Unfiltered, you get it where anywhere you look for podcasts. So it's myself, comedian Jim Norton. We talk everything MMA, pop culture.
Yeah.
What are you watching lately, Hoffa? What are you watching lately? What are you streaming?
I usually do
not fight related, mofo.
Not oh shit.
You could be much, fighting man. In it. You don't watch anything.
I was watching that karate show on Netflix. The
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai. Cobra
was fun.
It was fun. It was fun. It was kind of like it took me a while to get hooked on it, but everybody was talking about it.
Yeah.
And then I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. I thought it was a little silly, but then. Like every TV show you start watching, you just get hooked to it. So,
well, I'll tell you right now, I'm watching Warrior on HBO Max. That thing was on Cinemax. What a good show that is.
Warrior?
Ooh.
All right.
It's about San Francisco Chinatown in like 1878 after the Civil War here in America, you know?
Okay.
So like you had like the Chinese coming over. They were getting discriminated against a lot of hate against them. I fucking always pronounce it wrong. Anyway, so there was fucking this gangs and this the police, who's corrupt, who's not, such cool characters. I am digging this. I just saw my buddy Michael Bisping in an episode. I'm like, oh
shit.
But I'll tell you, the show's Warrior. What a good show.
Oh, awesome.
I've been watching that lately. Okay. Besides that, I recommend Vikings. Probably my
watch any of that. And
well, get into this shit.
I know. I'm due to watch Game of Thrones too, that everybody talks about. I never saw one single fucking episode.
Well, I mean, listen, then you're behind now. I can't help. That ship has sailed. You know, try
to watch it. That.
Oh, I read all the books too, not to be that guy.
No.
And I don't even read books, but I read those books. I loved it. It fell off a little towards the end.
Okay.
But that's because the show went past what the guy was writing. But that I hope he comes up with the rest of his books, because the books were good, really good.
That's awesome.
And it's hard to keep my attention. So,
look, just before we close this,
yeah, we're flying, man. Go ahead, we can talk a little bit more.
One thing that I loved on that Looking for a Fight is that I still remember. I think it's one of the funniest moments is where you were you guys drove to Connecticut. Dana White had a meeting at ESPN or something. You were waiting outside on like literally on a sidewalk. and a fucking crazy guy came like staring at you and trying to pick a fight with you. And you were like, dude, just keep walking. There's a safer fight for you across the street or something. And then you were telling us, like, it's fucking unbelievable. That always happened to me.
I don't know, man. I'll tell you, half a trouble. And yeah, Dana makes it like, no, it is you. It's not. I go, is it me? He goes, yeah, it's you. I mean, maybe I can be quick to go off sometimes, but there's other times, man, like that time I'm with Dean Thomas, some homeless dude or whatever. That guy walks by. Just go, what the fuck are you looking at? He goes to me. I go, that's when I'm like, yo, I go, dude, man, there's a safer fight on the next block.
Oh, shit.
Don't do this. They're going to think it's me. They're going to think I'm looking for trouble. You know, there's that time in Vegas when I had to control that drunk in front of my family that got viral. And I had to mount this guy in a cafe. It's like, these things, it's just ridiculous, man. I'm like, yo, but that's what's so good about jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
Jiu-jitsu is like having a superpower. You know what I mean? I put any one of my students in the same position as me as that time I was in Vegas when that drunk started some trouble. And, you know, I don't want any of my students, because I don't look like a pussy. So for somebody to start with me, they can start with anybody. And I don't want any of my students getting embarrassed in front of their family. At the end of the day, all I did was mount a drunk white belt. It's no big deal. It's easy. But to the untrained eye, it looked like magic, because that's what jiu-jitsu, like, wow, how could this guy control this grown-ass man and whatnot? So, you know, jiu-jitsu, like I tell my students, it's like you develop a superpower. It's a wild
thing.
That's
true. And it's in your head too, right? Like, I tell a story here, and probably people that follow the podcast are going to say, oh, shit, he's going to tell that story again. But it's my daughter. She's 9. And a couple of years ago, she had a problem with a kid. You know, like the after-school stuff that they do here? They stay a little later after school. And there's a bunch of kids. There's like some special need kids that they all stay kind of together. And one day we got a note saying, hey, this kid kind of like slept her. I was like, all right, it's fucking kids playing. I'm not going to get involved. Right? It's a boy, you know, he's probably just being funny and he fucking gave her a slap. Not on the face, it just slapped her arm or something. And then a couple of days later, the same boy kicked her. I was like, all right, so now we got a fucking problem, right?
Yeah, we got to address that.
And my daughter was doing jiu-jitsu already, and I sat down with her and I said, look, you know the jiu-jitsu class you go, right? She's like, yeah. Like, all right, so you know how to take someone down? I'm like, yeah. So, all right, so next time this boy comes over, you're going to look at him in the eye and you're going to say, back off. If he doesn't back off, you're going to take him down, you're going to mount him, and you're going to wait for the teacher to come. And she was looking at me like I have 3 heads. And she was like, oh, shit, that's why I do jiu-jitsu. Kind of like, it was the first time she connect that the stuff she does in school, she could do it after.
Yeah.
You know, like, she could say, oh, I can use that somewhere else, you know?
So how does this end, Hoffa? Did she mount this?
Never had a problem again. No shit, I was hoping. I'm a terrible father. I was like, I hope she kicks his ass tomorrow.
She gets that special needs kid and she mounts his ass. She tells him, hey, listen, you better get the help you need, kid. Don't be kicking me. With you, Hoffa. That's hysterical.
That's fucking awesome. Look, we'll finish with that. We'll finish with that. We'll come back. We'll do it again. I want to sit down with you and tell fight stories and stuff like that.
Yeah, man. Listen, now that
another one. I'm a big fan.
Do this again, you know what I mean? Right now, dude. Like I said, off. I live this shit. I'm going back to my school. I'm gonna go teach some jiu-jitsu. You know what I mean? But you know, to you and your audience, thank you for having me. Check out UFC Unfiltered. And Hoffa, if you're ever in Long Island, where are you
situated? I'm in New York. I'm like 40 minutes from Hanzo.
But you're upstate on the Hanzo, aren't you?
Upstate, yeah.
What belt are you?
What was that?
What belt are you?
I'm a blue belt.
Why do you say it like that?
No, because
I was a blue belt too.
I don't train enough. That's
most
why I'm like
important thing is that you're on the journey, man.
I know.
And like I said, for the guy that just pulled off his outside Ashi, the journey doesn't end at black belt. Don't worry.
I know, for sure, right? For sure. I just wish I could train more, but that's on me. That's
it's all good, man. Listen, I'm going to start listening to your podcast.
Awesome.
And you and your people start listening to UFC Unfiltered.
There you go. I'll put the link. Guys, listen to it. And Matt, thank you so much, man.
Thank you, Hoffa, man. We made it happen. We'll do it again soon.
We'll do this again. Thanks
so much.
Take
care, brother.